approval smote, their chisel clove and graver oath, their forged was blade and wound was hilt, the silver mine, the mason built, their barrel.
And we're back for yet another Riddles in the Dark Digest episode. Amazingly fast turnaround. I'm sure you guys are all impressed. It seems like a really fast turnaround for us because we literally like finished recording the previous one like 5 minutes ago, because we're just sitting down this weekend and knocking out as many as we can, because we know that you guys are just salivating at the possibility of new content from the Tolkien Professor iTunes podcast feed. So let me introduce myself. I am the co-host of the Riddles in the Dark Digest podcast, as well as the co-host of the Riddles in the Dark podcast with Corey Olson. And my partner in crime on these digest episodes is the lovely and wonderful Trish Lambert. Hello, Trish.
Hello. You didn't say your name. You're Dave Kale.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm just totally discombobulated. Yes.
The lovely and wonderful, equally lovely and wonderful Dave Kale.
They all know me. They hear me on this.
They hear you all the time
on this,
right?
iTunes feed. They're like hearing more of me per minute of audio content than they do of Corey at this point. Probably
the Dave Kale Network.
Yeah, yeah, right. And then you could do with Father Roderick too. So yes. you're all you keep me company all the time in my car, because I listen to this. I listen to Riddles in the Dark, and then I listen to Secrets of the Hobbit. And
yes,
it's like Dave Kale all the time.
People are getting sick of me. And when we start releasing our the new Silmarillion seminar stuff that's piling up, people get even more sick of that. That is going to be a real experiment, because that's like the first. Actually, no, it's just like this. This is actually the real experiment here. This is the first ever podcast series featured on the Tolkien Professor iTunes feed that does not include Corey.
Oh my gosh! I hadn't realized that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is going to be an experiment. Uh-huh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, gosh. Now, no. So now I'm all worried, right?
It's pressure's like, on.
Nobody comes. Yeah, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, gosh. And, you know, keep up the same quality level. And, oh, mm-hmm. my gosh. I hadn't even thought of that. Oh,
yep.
my gosh.
That's right. Yep, pressure's on.
The Silmarillion 2, right? 2.0 is going to be that, too, right?
It's exactly right, yeah. And the only reason we haven't released that yet is we've actually been doing it for several months now. And you can listen live. We haven't released it yet because we didn't want to release that while we were still releasing the older seminar episodes.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We're still in those held episodes.
And also, like, frankly, the first few meetings of that seminar, people are still feeling it. I mean, when you have 6-7 people on a Skype call, it's challenging.
I'll bet it is.
Yeah, and there's a few folks that we're kind of teaching to not ramble on for 5-10 minutes at once. So we're still, it's a work in progress, but we'll start.
You have to make sure I just did it. You have to make sure I didn't talk over other people.
Yes. Well, in a seminar setting with two people, it's banter and it's entertaining. With 6 or 7 people talking about very academic material, I've found myself listening back to old seminar episodes. There's sometimes where I'm like, including myself, I'm like, God, just shut up. Just shut up already. You know, like, okay, we get it. We see what you're saying here. You don't, and then I go on for another 5 minutes. So, yeah. with two people, they develop a dynamic. You know, they can interrupt each other, that kind of stuff. In a seminar setting, when people are feeling each other out, it's when you're having a discussion and you don't have nonverbal cues, it can be tough.
That's true. When you're on Skype too, and sometimes there's a lag or
exactly.
I mean, so it gives its own. It's tough to be on the bleeding edge, isn't
right.
it?
Skype's been doing. I've noticed that they have some sort of auto volume adjusting stuff. So like it identifies like who is talking, and when other people are talking at the same time, it throttles their volume. And so if you interrupt somebody and really talk over them and you're louder, it might actually throttle them down. So
I see.
So that's an extra weird element. So, but yeah, so this is a fun experiment, and that seminar will be also like, you know, basically Tolkien Professor content minus the Tolkien Professor. But
minus the Tolkien Professor.
Yeah, and so you know, I think. Realistically, we have to accept that there's going to be some people who belong to the cult, the personality cult of Corey Olson, who are going to say, well, if it's not Corey Olson, I don't want to listen, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I understand that sentiment, because I belong to that. At the same time, though, I think people, like, I give us all a chance because for two reasons. One is a philosophical reason, and the other one is a practical reason. The philosophical reason is this. Corey's mission is not to become the world's internet expert on Tolkien and to have everybody listen to him all the time and think whatever he – and parrot what he says. Corey's mission is to democratize scholarship and not just Tolkien scholarship, but all of this kind of scholarship, but especially Tolkien scholarship. And part of that mission is hearing from other voices, and this is where he always intended to go with his podcasts. His goal wasn't to you know get a whole bunch of listeners downloading him, but rather to get people interested and inspire them to participate in things like Mythgard, and also contribute their own content, and right. And so actually incorporating them into the Tolkien professor and Mythgard sort of team and community has always been the vision. And so I ask people, you know, to, hey, buy into that right. And give things a chance. You know, if you don't like it, you don't like it, that's fine. But buy into it. Give it a chance.
Give us a chance, that's right. Please.
So, but anyway, the ruthlessly practical thing here is the fact that the compromise is if you want more content from the Corey Olson Production Network, it's just not going to all it can't include
not
him.
Gonna always be Corey.
Yeah, because it's just too much time for him. But you can get the second best thing, which is people who love him and buy into his stuff and aren't him, but hopefully have insightful things to say and different perspectives that maybe you know enrich your experience and add to it, even if it doesn't duplicate him. And we've been trained by him and taught by
That's
him
right.
and that kind
and
of
we're,
stuff.
So. And we're both in pretty regular communication with him.
Yep.
So, you know, yep. You're kind of getting Corey maybe a little bit by proxy with a little bit of us added in at the same time.
Exactly.
So, and Tolkien too, you know, so what a, you know, it's like a salad.
Yep. And as I mentioned on the previous episode, the ultimate solution here is the Trish Lambert solution, which is flip, you know, cross the line from consumption to production and join
right.
the team.
And join the team.
You know, so. if you don't want to listen to us talk, then by all means, add your voice and get other people to listen to you.
That's right.
Okay, so enough of that. Let's get into the actual Riddles in the Dark stuff. So I think our goal for this episode is to try and do episodes 4 and 5, and we'll see how quickly we get through those, and maybe we'll be able to record 6 and 7 today as well. So,
oh my gosh,
yeah. Episode 4, if people recall, is the last of the dwarf focused episodes that we've done. We will revisit them, but we sort of had a dwarf myopia at the beginning and we kind of moved on to other things. So episode 4 was about Thorin. We kind of went Thrain, Thror, Battle of Azanulbazar, Thorin. So we were really exploring the history of the family of Thorin Oakenshield and who are the heirs of Durin, one of the 7 dwarf lords. So episode 4, if folks recall, we basically just talked all about Thorin and how he will be characterized. And in particular, Corey is just obsessed with the fact that they seem to be portraying him as very young. And it seems like that could really change his character and maybe make him not as old and bitter, maybe make him more young and virile, all kinds of stuff. And what we were really interested in this episode, one thing we settled on, was the potential rivalry between Thorin and Bilbo over the leadership of the group and how they're going to craft a story arc for Thorin, because he is one of the characters that actually gets a story arc in The Hobbit, who actually grows and changes as it goes, particularly toward the end. So we sort of had the feeling they might expand that. The question of the week, which was sort of tangentially related to that, which I'll explain, is how will Thorin end up in the Elven King's dungeon? And there were 3 choices here. A was just as in the book, he will be taken by the elves prior to the spider conflict. B was he will be captured with the rest of them after the spider fight, so they won't be separated. C, which I don't know what we intended for that to indicate is none of the above, and I don't know if anyone actually chose that. Nope, no one did choose that, because no one else could think of anything else. So, just to give you a little context, the purpose of this question, what we're really getting at, is this rivalry question with Bilbo. Because Corey postulated one way to emphasize that would be to change the way events transpire in the book. And instead of having Thorin be captured separately, he actually is included in the spider fight with the other dwarves. And Bilbo, in fact, intervenes to rescue Thorin as well as the other dwarves. And in that way, we get this sort of Bilbo rescuing Thorin thing to add pressure on that growing rivalry between them. You know, oh, this is the... So instead of it just being Bilbo rescuing the dwarves, it's actually Bilbo actually rescues Thorin, and maybe that Thorin doesn't respond well to that. So that's what we were getting at, and something we were very curious about. So Corey and I actually disagreed on this. Corey's enamored of this idea of using that element to build the rivalry. So he chose B. He thinks that they will actually change it. I don't think it's necessary to do the rivalry, and I'm generally have an attitude of, you know, if you don't need to change it, don't change it. So I went with A. Would you like to any thoughts you want to add, Trish, before we get into our analysts and listeners' feedback?
Well, I can say, you know, as a listener to this, I was very interested in this whole, you know, I hadn't really thought about it until you guys brought it up about the Thorin Bilbo rivalry. And, mm-hmm. and actually, I just reread the Hobbit last semester, you know, with the course I was taking with Corey and the Lewis Tolkien course. But I still, you know, didn't really notice it. And I think actually it does get to this, you know, this thing about Thorin in the book is so much older that I didn't really think of the rivalry. You know, I didn't really look at the rivalry too much. I mean, I saw him sort of as this grumpy, irascible, you know, old dwarf in the book. But you're right. I mean, you know, when younging him up, making him younger in the movie. When you guys talked about this, right? I mean, I could definitely see that then, you know, being mm-hmm. a younger dwarf and how are they going to handle that? So yeah, mm-hmm. that is interesting. And then the question you guys settled on for this episode, I think kind of does then come into play here, which is, you know, how do we handle the, you know, his being captured? So it brought up a lot of new lines of thought for me in listening to this episode.
Yep. Yep, I think that is I think it's a neat question. I think it's this was Corey's brainchild. So let's hear from some of our analysts. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just going to go ahead and remove all of the suspense. Every single person picked A. it was like the week of Mark Fisher. Every single person except Corey picked A. So I'm very, very interested. Don't tell me yet, but I'm very interested to hear what you have to say and whether you will have a different perspective. But let's hear people's justification. First up, as always, we're going to read the blurb from Mark Fisher of Encyclopedia of Arda. Here's what he has to say. You've got an interesting question this time, though a bit tough to answer without indulging in wild guesswork. Well, that's true of all of them, I suppose. Anyway, I put together a few thoughts that might be relevant. I can see Corey's point about the potential for rivalry between Thorin and Bilbo, and it's certainly true that the films of The Lord of the Rings tend to heighten or even invent tensions and conflicts between characters for dramatic purpose. On the other hand, it seems hard to see Thorin, heir to the line of kings stretching back millennia, feeling realistically threatened by a mere hobbit of the Shire, especially one with no real interest in leadership at all. I could see some potential for moments of mistrust or suspicion, but I'm not sure how sustainable it would be to make this significant character arc for Thorin over two films. On the subject of Thorin's authority, I think we can see the scene that leads to Thorin's independent capture as reflecting his attitude quite nicely. After the first chaotic attempt to approach the Elven King's feast, Thorin takes charge. First he sends in Bilbo, and after Bilbo fails, he steps forward himself and ends up in the Elves' dungeon. If the filmmakers want to use this scene to show how Thorin handles leadership or how he relates to Bilbo in that context, there seems to be plenty of scope for them to that in the story as it stands. Bilbo's unaided fight with the spiders is a really crucial point in his own character development. I'm going to guess that the movie won't risk undermining Bilbo's own progress by altering things too much here, so I'm going for option A this time. Yeah, what I love about Mark is that he doesn't confine his comments and his arguments to the prediction question, that he addresses the core point, and that he actually opposes Corey on this idea of rivalry, that he thinks that it's really kind of the potential for it's weak because there's really no real reason they would be rivals because Thorin mm-hmm. just due to position. So I like that. What do you think?
I think he makes a really good point here. I mean, I think I agree with you. I mean, I really enjoy his thoughts, you know, over and above just the question itself. Of course, I don't know that I could say much more without giving away my answer.
Okay, good. All right. Let's save it. So let's next hear from Father Roderick of SQPN Secrets of the Hobbit podcast, on which I am also a partner.
As much as I love this idea of Bilbo saving Thorin, I do believe that there would be another option, and that is that Bilbo will be very brave and clearly, you know, play an important role during the battle with the spiders, but Thorin will miss out on that. And then later mm-hmm. on, when they, you know, he's kind of the anti-hero here. He's just captured and nothing glorious, no real fight, which is a bit humiliating later on when he hears about, you know, the exploits of Bilbo and how there was this tremendous fight and he was just sitting there not being able to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
that's my take on it as well.
That's kind of how I think it will play out. And, you know, I was thinking of, Thorin almost, including in the way he looks, he makes me think of the in Star Trek, these, Klingons. So mm-hmm. he looks a bit like a big Klingon. And for a Klingon, there's nothing worse than to be captured without a fight. You know, it's like
missing out on the fight.
So I'm thinking if they go with that kind of characterization, then it would be very humiliating for him to actually have been captured just stupidly by the elves, and then
that was my take too. I was thinking that it's a neat idea, and I like this idea of tension between the two characters, but I don't think the spider battle is necessary to create it. I think they can do it other places. So
I agree. How
do you think about that? This idea of this kind of character arc for Thorin and Bilbo.
Well, I like it, and I think that you need to have a certain tension within the company, and Thorin. Especially because we know that in the, you know, when with the Arkenstone, he's going to get very mad at Bilbo. There must be kind of a prelude to that. So mm-hmm. I think there will be an ongoing tension and rivalry between the two, and probably felt more by Thorin than by Bilbo.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bilbo is just not really, you know, he's not that ambitious. He's kind of the accidental hero in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I never thought about that. You need Thorin to be kind of a bit of a controversial dwarf there. Why doesn't he like Bilbo? And we might see some reasons why not.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, this process of really going in depth on analyzing how they might execute the films and asking these hard questions about how to do it is very cathartic. I'm going to be very well prepared emotionally for major changes to the films, and I don't think I'll react as violently as I did with the Lord of the Rings.
Because, right.
Like the Battle of Azanulbazar, just talking it through with Corey, and then hearing the predictions that our other analysts made, I just came out of it thinking, it can't be in there. Much as I love it, I know it absolutely won't work, and I've accepted it.
Yeah, no, it's great, and I love this game because it makes you think about all the possibilities, and you could never play this game after the movies come out. You know, it's over with all the speculation. There won't be another incarnation of the Hobbit anytime soon. Perhaps in a video game, but certainly not as a movie. So,
you know, the Klingon thing. I mean. I was just thinking about the picture in Entertainment Weekly that you guys were looking at yesterday on the mm-hmm. Episode 12. I mean, he does. He looks like a Klingon.
He totally does. At least he looks less so in the new one, but in the old one where he has him standing there and he's kind of like – like the angle of the camera and the shadowing on his face makes him look like he has sort of a more pronounced forehead and brow, and he looks totally and his beard and coloring just totally Klingon. And the blade even looks kind of – it's got sort
of – I was just going to say Orcris looks kind of Klingon-y as a weapon, you
know? It's so tempting to think that they must have been looking at Klingon designs when they were doing some of that stuff.
They got – some of the people that worked on the movie may have come from Star Trek or something.
That's right, yeah. So obviously Father Roderick thinks disagrees that with Corey, doesn't think that there's any real possibility of them changing the story, or just thinks it's unnecessary. So, and I do, I left in the, I always try when I'm doing, when I'm editing the Father Roderick's contributions, I try to edit as much of myself out as possible, because it's like, why do you need to hear from me again? But
I thought comment about catharsis was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, and I've said that before, and I don't want to. Basically, I leave myself in whenever I'm making a comment to which I Father Roderick has a response that I want to keep.
Right.
And I wanted to hear his comments about the game, because I totally agree with him. Like, this is super fun, and we cannot do it after the movies come.
After the movie, yeah, that's right.
So I'm really looking for. I don't know about you, but I'm going to print out a list of the predictions when I go watch the movie and take a pen.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why
I think we actually are going to have to come up with a winner or something. You know, we're going to have to like tabulate results after the movie.
Yeah, I personally think it's unavoidable that we're for some of these questions we're going to have to convene a committee to decide what the right answer was, because I suspect there's gonna be cases where it's like I don't know where does that A, B, or C, or D, what is this? We didn't expect this, and it's ambiguous. So,
well, I think you and Corey are gonna have to have sort of like two or three Riddles in the Dark debrief episodes.
Oh, we certainly will, and we'll be having, and I think we'll be having all of our guest analysts on, and because we're gonna want to hear people's reactions too. So,
absolutely.
In fact, maybe what we'll do is we should. Oh, you know what we should do that would be great? We should print like a – you know how for the Oscars and stuff, people always print out like little
– Oh, yeah.
Little forms that you can keep track. We should we should make one of those and make it where listeners can print it out and keep track of what they thought write down their predictions and keep track of what they think the right answer was.
Right.
And make that into a game.
Right, and they could take it with you to the theater.
Exactly. And then what we should do is we should have a contest, a photo contest. Take a picture of yourself at the theater, either in line or before or after or something, holding up your
prediction.
Your prediction thing, and then the best photo will give some prize.
Run those by Corey, Dave, and see what he thinks.
I will. I think that's a cool idea. So do you want to read some listener comments from the website?
Yeah, we had some comments. Tony Mead shared a photo from the internet. I think we've probably all seen this since, right? With Thorin in full battle mode with Orcrist in hand and what looks like spider web in his hair. And he thinks that B must be the answer because of this. I do think – let's see. Yeah, so Dark Jackal from ThorinOakenshield.net kind of has sort of an opposite. He says even though it looks like Thorin is present for the spider attack, he thinks that Thorin gets separated at some point, like during that battle, and gets carried off. Mm-hmm. So he says, so far the arguments for B are very convincing from a filmmaking standpoint, but there is just something in my mind that pushes me away from that chance. And he's also saying that he thinks it will be A, that he will actually get separated. And I guess he says during the battle. Mm. Now, I had to throw this next one in. Robagast the Green, who actually – this is actually from a comment on a later episode, but it really applies here. And I just have to share this because it's just like makes me – sort of laugh in a very nervous way. He came up with a really scary idea. So in a comment on a later episode, he goes, what if the reason why Thorin is so young is because he has a ring of power and I have this written wrong. So a subplot of the movie will be that the necromancer is using Azog/Bol and perhaps a Nazgul or two throughout the movie to try and get Thorin's ring, because Sauron believes that Thorin's ring is the one ring. Azog will get the ring from Thorin at the Battle of Five Armies, give it to a messenger who brings it to the necromancer, who kills the messenger when he realizes this is not the one ring. He's so mad, in fact, that it causes him to burst into a huge eye. like this comment belonged in this episode.
Yeah, I recall there was a similar comment about Azog, about basically like a sort of an equally horrific notion of about Azog not dying at the, you know, about them trying to play him up as a villain. And it, like, involving him with the company at various places. And like, we took that to its sort of its horrifying extreme, where it's like he's there at Goblin Town visiting as a liaison when they're there. And he's following them into Mirkwood, and then he's attacking them. Yeah, like, these are some, like, not completely implausible, very awful notions.
Very awful notions. Yeah, I know. The thing is, it makes me laugh nervously because it sounds so like, oh my gosh, it's out of, you know, it's crazy. And then you go, no, well, actually, they might do that. I mean,
yes, the ball of fire thing maybe is a little sarcasm, maybe, but.
To a huge eye of fire.
But the ring thing is interesting. A lot of people have actually – that I think needs to be a topic for an episode. What are they going to do with the Dwarven Ring? Because that's come up in another number of comments, and people have been very imaginative about how it might be used. They've talked about here are the indication Thorin maybe has it. Another indication that maybe it will come up, maybe Gandalf will get it at Dol Guldur. Another thing that somebody had talked about was maybe they'll conflate the Arkenstone with the ring.
Oh,
so they'll actually say instead of the Arkenstone being a large jewel, the Arkenstone will actually be Thror's ring buried in the Lonely Mountain, and Arkenstone will be another name for it.
Boy.
Yeah, Corey's like, no, I don't think they'll do that. But I could see it.
I think there's actually some comments on this. We'll get to in one of the later digest episodes too, talking about some other roles of the Dwarven Ring and the Elven Rings also might play.
Yes, yeah, that probably needs to be an actual topic for the show.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you.
Do you know what photo Tony Mead is talking about? I'm searching for Thorin.
I saw it. I think he actually put it up on the comment on Mythgard Institute. Oh, you know, the comment that he put up. So it would be under this Mead. Under this episode 4.
Oh, there he is. Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. So let's see. And see, he's like got like spider web in his hair.
Huh. Where did this photo come from? I don't recall ever seeing this photo before.
I was trying to think too. I couldn't remember. I mean, I've read now this comment so many times. Yes. That I can't remember if I saw a photo before or not.
Dude, Tony Mead, if you listen to this, can you tell us where the heck this photo came from?
That's where you got it. Yeah.
Is this from one of the production videos or something? Because I'm really it's so grainy. Like, there's a part of me deep down that's like, this has been Photoshopped. But I don't think so, because that is the sword, for sure. So it's definitely Thorin standing there.
Right.
Interesting. Very interesting. I don't know. That maybe, boy, that could really push things over. But I'm still sticking with A. I think Dark Jackal's sort of counterweight, you know, that he could be attacked by spiders, but that doesn't mean he's at the actual spider battle. He might be attacked by spiders and then separated, or he might be separated, attacked by spiders. Doesn't mean he's actually at the same battle as Bilbo. So, but I would like to know more about this photo. So if Tony Mead or some other listener can tell us where it comes from, I would love to hear it.
Yeah. Hmm. Me too.
So, as I mentioned before, everybody picked A this time. That's except Corey. Corey
right?
picked B, but I picked A. Mark, Arwen Kester, Middle Earth News, Father Roderick, American Golden Star of Casual Stroll to Mordor. We don't have any audio for them this time. Hannah from Houghton Mifflin, Lillian Olorio from Warriors of the Westfold, Last Alliance. Everybody picked A. So I guess the only question left at this point is, what are you going to pick, Trish?
I picked B.
Yay, good.
I guess I'm agreeing with Corey, right? He'll be captured with the rest of them after the spider fight. They won't be separated. But it's not because of – I mean, Corey's got a much better reason, I think. I don't think there's enough time to do it by the book. I just don't. You know, I said this on another one, the last time. There's just so much to get done.
Can I interrupt briefly?
Sure.
We got a little distortion there, so do you want to say that again? So
okay, which part do I just?
I'm just going to say. So what do you think, Trish?
I'm going to go with Corey this time. B, I think Corey and I will be the two standouts. I'm on B with this. I think he'll be captured with the rest of them. I just don't think there's enough time in the movie to do the separation thing. Now, it's possible, and of course, the photo kind of swayed me too. And you know, like you said, it might be Photoshop, but. It's possible.
I don't think it's Photoshopped.
You don't think so?
Yeah.
Well, I could see, I could actually, now that we've talked, I could see him being part of the spider conflict. And now that we also know at this late date that the elves are going to be showing up at the spider fight, that he may get carried off and separated during the spider fight. But that still is different from the book. It's just because A is just as in the book, he will be taken by the elves prior to the spider conflict. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to be part of the spider conflict, and maybe he'll get carried off separately during the spider conflict. But I think that still is a B. I think that's still B, right?
Fair enough. Fair enough. I picked A, but I don't feel strongly about it. I think this could go either way. I don't know.
But see, my reasoning isn't anywhere near as
highfalutin.
Well, it's just I'm more of a practical. I just don't think there's enough footage, and you know, I think they'd run out of time. I mean, there's other things.
In other words, it's more streamlined to not shoot separate threads.
Right.
I mean, they don't have to. They could just Thorin just disappears, and they continue on, and they don't show what happened to him until the other dwarves arrive at the Elven King's halls, and oh, there's Thorin.
Well, the other thing I don't see is what does the separation of Thorin from the dwarves do for the story? I mean, there's really not – I mean, even in the book, there's not – I mean, well, in the book he gets separated, I think it's – before the spider conflict. So it's – you know, there's sort of this mystery of where did Thorin go to. But in terms of the general story of The Hobbit, when you think about putting it on the film, I mean, there's it doesn't really forward the plot in any direction.
Yeah, that's a good point. And on film – separate him. On film, it might muddle things a little bit. In the book, you kind of have time and space to deal simultaneously with we're lost, Thorin's gone, oh God, spiders. In a film, it might be just too much to be worrying about where's Thorin and oh, there's some spiders. Maybe it's easier to just streamline it. So that's a good point. I think that's I think it's very likely.
Have anything to do with the. I mean, my decision has nothing to do with any potential rivalry between Thorin and Bilbo, and in fact, I'm kind of my jury is kind of out on that. I mean, I kind of agree with Mark on that. You know, I don't know that they're really. I think it's very possible in the movie that Thorin will still have the attitude toward Bilbo they'd had in the book, which is kind of looks down on him pretty much the whole time until right around the time of the battle.
Yeah.
He just basically he comes from the he's from this long line of dwarves, and he's Mr. King. Under the mountain, and this guy is this little hobbit. I mean, there's not enough there for there to even be a rivalry.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very reasonable point. So
we'll see.
Cool. Okay. Well, I think we have, more than enough time to knock out, episode 5 here as well.
Although I must say episode 5 could become a big one just on its own. I know we had a lot of comments on this one.
Yeah, that's fine. But I'm happy to roll into this, and if we run over an hour, that's fine. Because I think we're going to combine 6 and 7 no matter what, too.
Yeah, we do need to.
So I say let's just go ahead and transition into 5. So let's see. Okay, so episode 5. To refresh everyone's memory. The question there, this is where we finally quit being hung up on dwarves and moved on to some other topic. And in particular, what we were really interested here, and I think this may be our most commented upon
thing. Yeah.
Although I think like at least a third of the comments are me responding to people. So no, actually, I'm scrolling through. I don't see myself that much. People really latched onto this. This was on the trolls and sort of a very fun kind of one of people's favorite chapters, I think. And one of the ones that, in my opinion, is kind of it's sort of a indicative of the fundamental dilemma that the filmmakers here of with The Hobbit, where staying true to the book means really embracing the childishness and the humor and the whimsical elements like a talking purse, whereas embracing the epic mode of the Lord of the Rings, and in particular of the films as they were made, and meeting the expectations of the large common movie-going public means maybe changing some of the essential elements of The Hobbit. And this troll chapter really is one of them, because it's very whimsical, and the trolls here are nothing like the trolls that we see, you know, the cave trolls and whatnot that we see in The Lord of the Rings on screen. So what they do with this scene, I think, will really be sort of a signal as to how the rest of the films are going to go. Is it going to be a whimsical, lighthearted, humorous film almost for kids? Or is it going to be more of a serious, kind of scary film with action and monsters and whatnot? So the prediction question that we attached to it, which is somewhat unrelated to the humorous elements here, but maybe a little bit actually, is how will the trolls' defeat and subsequent transformation into stone be portrayed on screen? And I'll explain how this relates to this fundamental question about the nature of the film and about the humor in this area. There's four options, A through D. A is Gandalf will accomplish it as he does in the book through sheer cleverness. And the note here, we had to be very clear about how to differentiating these answers, so I have a lot of notes. Note here is no magic. If people don't remember, especially people who may mentally confuse the animated Hobbit movie with the book, Gandalf actually doesn't do anything. Like, Gandalf achieves the trolls' defeat here purely by tricking them into staying outside until the sun comes up. You know, there's this part where he shouts, "Dawn take you all," and slams his staff down, and the sun comes up, you know, just over the trees, and the way it's done in the Rankin-Bass cartoon that I remember watching as a kid, it looks like magic almost. It looks like he actually causes the sun to come up. It's very, if they didn't intend for that, it's very sloppily done, because that's totally how it looks. But that's not how it is in the book. Gandalf here just basically throws his voice and uses trickery and ventriloquism to get the trolls to argue amongst themselves and be distracted from the time, and they stay up all night arguing and end up being caught outside in the sun. So no magic, and that's what option A is. It's the Mark Fisher, it will be the way it is in the book answer. Option B is it will happen via Lord of the Rings style action sequence occupying the trolls until sunrise. So again, no magic here. This is more of a trolls and Bilbo and maybe Gandalf engage the dwarves and Gandalf and Bilbo engage the trolls in physical combat, swords and spears and shields and axes, and battling them. Maybe at one point the trolls gain the upper hand and the dwarves flee, and the trolls find themselves pursuing the dwarves into the wild. But regardless, it's through combat, not including magic, that the trolls are delayed and kept outside until the sun rises and they're turned to stone. Option C is the magic option. It's the sort of Rankin-Bass version where Gandalf accomplishes it via magic, directly or indirectly. By directly, we mean he casts a stone troll spell that turns them into stone. Indirectly means that he maybe uses magic to confound them or confuse them and catches them out in the sun, or maybe causes the sun to magically rise or something like that. So basically, Gandalf accomplishes it via magic. D is sort of the none of the above answer. Basically, the trolls are defeated not by anything done by Gandalf, Bilbo, or the dwarves, but rather the trolls fall prey to their own stupidity. Perhaps the dwarves fight the trolls off and escape, and maybe the trolls don't pursue them, but still the trolls just hang outside and get caught outdoors when the sun rises. So this doesn't preclude the use of magic or the use of physical combat or the use of sheer cleverness. But rather, what it says is that those things don't actually contribute. Maybe those things contribute to the dwarves escaping, but they don't contribute to the trolls being turned to stone. Rather, the trolls just are stupid. They hang outside until the sun gets them. So that is our four answers. Any questions, Trish? Any clarifications or anything?
No, I don't think so. This is a toughie, actually. I mean, you know, like you said, you had to have a lot of very clear definition for each one, because it is this is going to be one of the scenes I'm going to be probably most interested in seeing in terms of in the context of this game, because there's a lot of different ways it could go. And actually, we have quite a few comments, which I'll endeavor to summarize when we get to that point.
Yes. Well, let's dig into them. The reason this connects to the larger topic of the episode, humor and the nature of the film, is that if you're pushing this film toward more of a Peter Jackson, Lord of the Rings epic action type, adventure movie, it almost certainly will be B or C, it seems like. Or you're tempted to push it toward B or C. B being kind of, like the Chamber of Mazarbul battle, where it's the Fellowship fighting off orcs and trolls and whatnot. C being kind of more of the Gandalf Saruman telekinetic battle atop Isengard, hitting each other, swinging their staffs and hitting each other with invisible energy, or the fight to exorcise Saruman's possession of Theoden, that kind of stuff, that kind of magic. Because the difficulty of A on screen is just going to be very challenging, and it really includes a lot of very humorous elements, like the trolls thinking that being confused and arguing about things that make no sense because they're just idiots and Gandalf is tricking them and stuff. Whereas if you really want it to retain the spirit of the book and have it be, about outwitting the trolls and that kind of stuff, and playing up kind of the Cockney accents and that kind of stuff, that maybe A or D really sort of does that more.
Right,
and so
right.
A and D are kind of the more true to the book answers. B and C are more of the Lord of the Rings films type answers. So,
well, and Jackson has, I think, and this is subsequent to, I think, the time that this episode was done, but I think he has actually gone on record as saying that he wanted to make a much – I think you guys have talked about this – much lighter type movie than The Lord of the Rings was.
Yeah,
there is more humor and whatnot.
Yeah, he has said that he wants it to be more humor. But, but it's not – it's not clear what he means by that. I mean, it can be a funnier and less dark show and still be mostly in the mode of the Lord of the Rings. Like some of the things we've seen in the trailers, the dwarf rush of the trolls looked a lot like looked a lot more Lord of the Ringsy than Hobbity. In the Hobbit, the way this scene unfolds is the dwarves wander in one by one and get captured. So it may be more humorous and still be mostly in the mode of the Lord of the Rings. So.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Okay. this was a toughie for me. It was, and I'm kind of like looking. I know we've actually the analysts weighed in, didn't they? I mean, we've got input from a number of the analysts on this one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. So first, let me read Mark Fisher of Encyclopedia of Arda. Here's what he has to say, and he starts out with a defense.
Yes. This is when he finally says, "Oh, you called me on my answers."
Yes, he starts out with a defense of his streak of A's, and then resigns himself to yet another one. I hadn't realized just how many A answers I'd given until you mentioned it on the podcast. I was really determined to talk myself into something different this time, but then I remembered that Bilbo tells the story of this scene at his birthday party, so I'm afraid it's another A from me this time. Anyway, here's some text that you can use in your digest, yada, yada, yada. I thought this was a really hard question, but then it occurred to me that Bilbo pretty much gives us an answer during his birthday party in the Fellowship of the Ring movie. In his story to the gathered hobbit children, he tells a compressed version. The trolls spent so long arguing that the sun rose over the trees and turned them all to stone. Perhaps oddly, Bilbo doesn't mention Gandalf's involvement, but the scene does cut briefly to Gandalf as Bilbo is telling his tale, which I suppose could be taken as a nod. That all matches up with the shot we see of the trolls later in the movie, where they're posed as if discussing something on the ground between them, presumably the bagged dwarves. Of course, the filmmakers could just decide to ignore all this, but having doubly established the outline of the events, I'm betting they'll at least follow that outline as a template. If all these assumptions are right, it looks very much as though the events will unfold more or less as in the book. The only real question is whether Gandalf will be involved at all. Taken literally, Bilbo's account makes the trolls the victims of their own stupidity, i.e. answer D, with no prompting from Gandalf. Assuming the movie goes this far, though, it's hard to see why they dropped the Gandalf element, so I'm afraid that makes it yet another A from me.
Well, you know, at least he didn't give an answer just to be, you know, to go out of his pattern. I mean, he stuck to his guns here.
That's right. And I personally, I don't know about you, but I think he makes a very cogent argument. I forgot about the fact that Bilbo does recount this story in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I know that actually got brought up a lot by the folks in the comment section, too, that he brings up the story. Now, you know, I've kind of looked at both sides of this, which is that you know, on the one hand, you know, we can say that we're kind of locked in because Bilbo did this. On the other hand, you know, there is kind of a loophole here where if we're bringing, say, for example, we do the frame, you know, the frame comes back and we get some voiceover during this episode in the movie, you know, Bilbo could somehow explain away that scene with the kids fellowship. You know, in other words, we're not absolutely locked in because of that scene in Fellowship of the Ring. I mean, he could fudge it somehow as a voiceover during this part of the movie. So I don't know. But I'll tell you the thing for me in Mark's argument that gives me more concern is the statues themselves that we see in Fellowship of the Ring. Like he said, you know, they're frozen in position as if they're arguing over something on the ground. Mm-hmm. To me, that probably has more. That gives me more food for thought with regard to this question, probably, than really the story that he tells the children.
Yeah, that's a good point. I keep forgetting about the fact that we actually saw their stonified selves.
And I don't think Jackson's going to want to ignore – I don't think he could bring himself to ignore that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he does – he wants – from what I'm seeing, he wants to connect this to the trilogy. Mm-hmm. So to go ignore that part of Fellowship of the Ring – I don't think he can do that. I think what he's going to want to do is actually set the scene up so that it does follow on, you know, to what they see then in Fellowship of the Ring.
Yep. I agree. That I think that's an excellent point. The one thing we know for sure is that they are pitching this, setting this up as a prequel to the other film.
Right.
Inspired by the book and other material, but as a prequel to the films. And
right.
I think he would want to avoid glaring inconsistencies whenever possible.
I agree. I think that's true.
So
now I still, now I got to tell you, I mean, this food for thought hasn't gotten me any closer to, I mean, I still, you know, I think each of these choices have something to say for them. I mean, this is, I think, one of the harder questions so far, frankly, even
yes.
After the subsequent episodes, I still think this is one of the harder questions.
Yep, it's very, very good reason. There's lots and lots of reasons for each of the answers. They have evidence in their favor. So
in each one, I agree.
Yep, and the evidence isn't just related to how things are in the book. The evidence is related to what we know of Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyan as writers and as filmmakers.
Exactly.
What they've done before, both in terms of actual, like, you know, where they placed the stone trolls in the previous films, but also how they handled similar scenes in the previous films. So, yeah, you're right. It is a tough question.
And the thing is, too, I mean, I wonder, I'm trying to remember, if it hadn't been for the fact that we see the stone trolls in the Fellowship of the Ring and this scene of the Hobbit actually gets referred to, he may very well have cut the trolls out, much like he did Tom Bombadil. Because if you think about it, with the trolls, I mean, what? How does that push the story forward in terms of a film story? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think because he did do it in Fellowship of the Ring, I think he's going to have to keep the scene in. I mean, that's, I suppose, another option could be he just ditches the trolls entirely,
but I don't think
he does.
We've seen it in the trailer, so.
We've seen it in the trailer now. That's right. That's right. If we hadn't seen it in the trailer, we would.
It's certainly not unprecedented to have content in a film trailer that doesn't make it into the film,
but I think
it would be unusual to cut the whole scene. Also, I think
unusual.
It's just, I think it's an iconic scene. That would be just, I think this could be a potential, like, this is the kind of, the Tom Bombadil thing made people upset as it is. But there were very few people who were like, Well, that just ruins the whole film. It can't be Lord of the Rings without Tom Bombadil. I think mostly they were people's response, if they were disappointed at all, was like mine, which is, I would have loved for him to be in there, but I can completely understand why they cut him out.
That was my reaction. Yeah,
I think the troll scene here,
right.
It's like
the troll actually does it. I think it actually it's part of Bilbo's character arc, isn't it?
Yep, and it's also just an iconic scene. You know,
even if
you could make an argument for saying like, oh, you know, you don't really need it to drive his character. I still want it. You know, it's a Hobbit scene. It's like one of
you
the
gotta
iconic
have
scenes.
It. Yeah. That's right.
But you're right. This is a tough question, and this has been probably one of the most like the widest level of disagreement amongst our analysts and our listeners. And this is the first time. No, actually, that's not true. American Golden Star haven't always agreed, but they definitely disagreed this time. So let's go ahead and listen to what our contributors from A Casual Stroll to Mordor had to say.
I gotta go with A because, oh my gosh, please let it be like the book, because the book
was clever.
I
want it more than, but I can see how that would be difficult to kind of portray. What are you laughing at?
Arsenette says, make them aliens, because that's what Michael Bay is doing to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's making them aliens.
Is he really?
Yes, because he's
They're not aliens. They fell in some ooze.
They're teenage. They're ninjas.
And they were mutated.
And they're turtles. So obviously they come from a different planet, since everything is Earth-based about them.
I watched a lot of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when I was, 12, because my brother watched them, and he's much younger than me. And I even know the origin story of those. How can he get this wrong?
Michael Bay just wants to make everybody just so disappointed. This is... Michael Bay has officially jumped the shark. If he didn't jump the shark with the Transformers movies, he's jumping the shark. Thank goodness he is not directing The Hobbit.
Okay, anyway, back to The Hobbit. We don't need to talk about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right, right.
I hope and pray that it will be Gandalf will accomplish it, throwing his voice and making them talk. But I can see how that would be difficult. I mean, visually, that might be pretty darn boring to look at. You know what I mean? It's just Gandalf in the trees going, why don't we smash them later? And
I don't know.
And then they're all like, who said that?
Yeah, I realized when reading this that I was very prone to to vote the way I want it to be and not the way I think that Peter Jackson may do it.
I agree. A is how it should be done, but I think it's going to have to be probably B.
I'm thinking C.
You think that Gandalf is going to throw magic?
Yeah, because, okay, the reason I'm thinking that...
I'm attacking the darkness.
The reason I'm thinking that is I'm thinking when Gandalf arrived at the Battle of Helm's Deep, they made it kind of seem like Gandalf was shining this light from his staff when really what he did was blind them with the sunrise.
Right.
And I was kind
of
like...
It was a nice effect. It was a nice effect.
And I think that I can see them doing that again. I can just see them making it Gandalf doing magic. It's a great time to show off magic. So they're like, Gandalf turns them to stone. Or like you said, like speeds up time and it's suddenly morning. I can see them doing that.
If he does that, I will laugh out loud and everybody will be like, what is wrong with that chick?
Can they make that chick like turn down?
I think it will be B. I think that
I guess B just makes me too mad. I can't vote for it.
I think it may not be like an epic blah blah blah, but it needs action to it. The way it happens in the book, they're not moving. Like everybody's captured and Gandalf's in the trees. Or in the bushes and pretending to and he's doing ventriloquist work. I love the story. I'm not trying to say that I don't like the way it is in the book.
I know.
But if we sat down and watched that, we'd be like, what the crap's going on? There has to be movement. Okay. There has to be action. And maybe you're right. Maybe the action is that Gandalf does magic. I think that's stupid.
So we're both against D.
Yes.
D.
Is that they just kind of fart
around?
Yeah,
the dwarf. And the dwarves like escape and the trolls chase after him. That doesn't make it as, clever, I don't think. So I don't see them doing that. But we're both agreeing that there'll probably be some kind of action. You're going to go with B, and I'll go with C.
Okay.
Sounds fine. We've
let the best Hobbit win.
We'll be keeping score and live tweeting it when we're watching the movie.
Oh my gosh, I will not remember what I guessed by the time the movie comes out. I'll have to like bring a cheat sheet with me into the theater. I'll be
we got to print out. We got to print out the grid. There's a grid.
There's a grid.
Okay, so yeah, you say like a full action sequence, and that
like Bilbo jumps out and attacks, and Gandalf's thumping him with a staff,
or
and...
even like they come out rescuing. I can see like Bilbo like getting
instead of just sitting in the bushes and ventriloquist. Although it worked for Scooby-Doo, Shaggy did ventriloquist work all the time. He did.
Yes, he did. But that was with the great Casey Kasem.
I love Scooby-Doo.
All right, so we've got to move on quickly, so we're not going to spend a whole lot of time addressing their comments because we want to get into some of our other feedback. But
I will just say that I think the fact that they disagreed shows how tough this question is.
Yes. Yeah, I agree that this really is a very difficult question. I do want to, before we get into listeners, though, I want to listen or read the contribution we got from The Last Alliance. This was their first chance to send us like a blurb. Here's what they had to say. And if people recall, this is the Tolkien Society at the University of Alberta. They have to say, after much deliberation, the club has voted. Their chosen response is B. Though we are loath to acknowledge it, we feel that treating the sequence as done in the book would undermine the authority and epicness we see attributed to the dwarves in the official trailer. A couple of our members have formulated our general thoughts. It happens early enough in the book that we do not yet know about the dwarves and that they are strong fighters, but we do know the characters, and including an early action sequence will begin to establish the martial skill of the dwarves to the audience. As well, I think that Peter Jackson would have a hard time accepting that the trolls had been tricked instead of defeated, and in The Lord of the Rings, for the most part, Gandalf is overt and not the hiding in the bushes type. Interesting point. PJ has yet to include action sequences to appease his overall audience of Lord of the Rings action fans, not we purists. Peter Jackson has to include action sequences to appease his overall audience, The Lord of the Rings, the general, you know, general going public, not us purists. That, coupled with the fact that he obviously armed them, makes it seem obvious to us that this will be our first action sequence. Thanks for including us. We look forward to the next opportunity to weigh in. Interestingly, the vote was very close, but option B won out over option A by a very narrow margin, though I suspect this is rather due to wishful thinking on the part of those who chose A. So,
I would love to go to those meetings. What a fun meeting would have been.
I know. Yeah, doing this by vote.
Cool.
Yes. Yes. I hope they're having fun. I hope we've added to the fun of their meetings.
And I
hope they get even more enjoyment from hearing themselves on the show. And as I say, on later episodes, we actually have audio recordings from them to include.
Oh, cool. That's great.
Yes. So that's interesting. I wonder if they had a chance to reincorporate I often wonder when people submit their deliberations. I do know that the Last Alliance sent this. They joined our game relatively later, so they actually had a chance to listen to the episode and incorporate a lot of the evidence out there. So I'm sure they must have been aware of some of the things that people pointed out about the stone trolls in the films and Bilbo's story and stuff. But I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of evidence for the dwarves successfully fighting off the trolls. I think B is one of the weakest answers. So what do our listeners have to say?
Oh, gosh. Well, we got a lot of comments, like I mentioned earlier, about Bilbo's story to the children in Fellowship of the Ring, you know, being already, since it's already on film, you know, that we're kind of locked into that. Mark posted that unless Jackson goes back and changes things in the first Lord of the Rings movie or is willing to have discrepancies, we will for sure see, one, the capture and confinement of Bilbo and the dwarves, and if you could see me, I'm actually enumerating these on my fingers, two, references to more than one cooking method, three, an extended argument between the trolls, and four, the salvation of the adventurers by means of the sunlight demise of the trolls. And then he goes on to say, as for whether or not Jackson will employ at least some of the humor in Chapter 2, I don't see why not. He injected all manner of humor in the Lord of the Rings movies, which is not in Tolkien's book. I think Mark probably spoke probably for everybody that was talking about the story of the children, but, you know, I already kind of shared that, you know, there is kind of a way to fudge that if Jackson chose to. We might not like it, but he could.
Yeah. I think, and on his humor point, one thing I would want to add to that is that I don't think that Peter Jackson is averse to humor, but I think it's a different kind of humor. Like, I think the kind of humor the modern audience expects is kind of the goofy hobbit humor that we got in the Lord of the Rings films, where Merry and Pippin were turned into kind of buffoons, or the Legolas versus Gimli drinking scene. Which is in the extended edition.
Or the little quips that they do. Yeah, the little quips that they do back and forth.
Which is very modern humor, but it's not Tolkien. Mm-hmm. It's not the same kind of humor that you have here.
So that's right.
I think a lot of Tolkien's humor is very, I don't want to say old fashioned, but it's not necessarily to modern taste.
It's kind of fairy tale humor.
Yeah,
exactly. It's stuff that you would see like in Grimm or Andersen or something like that.
Yep.
You're right. Well, let's see, moving on here. Scott Holbrook Faust is thinking that we will see magical seeming ventriloquism. He thinks that the Don Take You All moment will be magicified based on the one shot from the trailer that you've mentioned already, Dave, of Gandalf, delivering. He says Gandalf delivering one of his blinding flashes there as sun's rising. Is there really I don't remember the flash coming from his staff. Is there a flash in that scene from the trailer?
Oh, I think there might have been. I need to go back and rewatch that.
I haven't watched it recently, so I can't remember. Based on the lighting and the surrounding greenery, Scott goes on, I can't think of anywhere else for him to be but in the troll shot. So I think there is agreement on that this scene of him with the sunrise behind him on the sort of hill with the staff, everybody pretty much agrees that's the troll shots, right?
Yes, I do agree with that. I the flash, I don't recall noticing that and thinking that's magic, but I do recall that scene and I agree it's the troll shaws.
The trolls. Scott goes on to say, I do think that there will be frightening and comedic elements balanced throughout the scene. Nothing so absurd as a Burra Hobbit pie, but certainly threateningly comedic dialogue. If Jackson is to maintain filmic consistency, and he says, I think we're assuming that he will, there will absolutely have to be cooking jokes. The obvious presence of a giant cauldron in the Charge the Troll scene in the trailer absolutely mandates at least a little culinary discussion, plus the position in which they're frozen clearly depicts some heated verbal argument. However, Bilbo's failure to mention any action on the part of Gandalf does still leave open D as an option. Scott himself is saying C, the Gandalf will accomplish it via magic directly or indirectly. So, you know, he brings up some good – I mean, I agree. I mean, I think there'll be cooking jokes. I think one of the things in my mind as I read these and as we talk about this is how long – I mean, I just – I'm trying to think how long this particular scene is going to be. The Last Alliance brings up, you know, this is the first – potentially the first action sequence. I'm just wonder how many – as you notice, you'll probably start to notice that I sort of am fixated on how many minutes is this movie going to be and what fraction of each of these things is going to be part of the movie.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
I just don't know. I don't know how many minutes. I think setting this up as the first action sequence, we know that we're going to have a scene where the dwarves are charging in, you know, and potentially there's going to be battle. So I think in that sense, you know, if we go by what Jackson's done before, you know, this probably will have quite a number of minutes on screen. And I have some ideas about if you went through
and you enumerated for each scene like this and we had this same conversation about riddles in the real game if you listed out the major scenes that you expect and then you put that's down true. How many minutes you think you would need to execute each of them without thinking about the overall total, you probably end up with an 8-hour movie at least.
Oh, you're right. And, you know, and in the spider fight, you got to have time for that. I mean, you know, you're right. Yes. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So I think the time thing
gonna be really interesting.
Is a really, really, really important issue.
And, you know, moving the story along, the pacing, you know, like, and I think, yes. I think we've even talked about that, you know, the pacing. Well, speaking of pacing, let me move on to William Bice and Matthew Beckman agreed with this. He says, if I might propose a theory here concerning the fate of the trolls, there is a moment 2 minutes into the trailer where Gandalf, well, again, shown standing on the hill, a sun rises, but he actually has a little bit of a different twist to it. He says, judging by the intensity of the light and the swiftness of the rising sun, it appears to be some sort of magically induced sunrise. or at least a natural one infused with magical properties. However, it is still quite clearly a sunrise. If this is the case, then it is also quite clear that Gandalf is the source of this magic, driving his staff into the ground as he did while defying the Balrog with his famous "You shall not pass" line. I can think of nothing in the tale of the Hobbit that this could be other than the sunrise that seals the fate of the trolls, turning them into stone. With this in mind, I'm going to guess C, as Gandalf is using magic to bring on this intensely bright flash of dawn, petrifying the trolls and rescuing Bilbo and the dwarves. And I thought this was kind of interesting because it's like, it is C, right, that he's accomplishing it, but he's accomplishing it by making like a faster sunrise or a artificial sunrise, which I hadn't really thought of before.
That's true. Or maybe he uses – he like incorporates the sunrise into a spell, the sunlight into
right.
a spell. I mean
right.
I guess we're making an assumption here, which is that Peter Jackson's trolls have the same weakness to sunlight that the trolls in the actual book do.
Right. I hadn't thought of that. That's really not – that's actually open for
right.
debate.
Because I mean, aren't they fighting – I mean they're fighting – well, I guess it's actually when they do their battle before the gates of Mordor, before the Black Gate at the end of The Return of the King, technically I think the sun's blotted out by darkness. But,
right. Big
– But it doesn't look – like on screen – it's not. On screen, there's light. And they fight trolls, so...
And they don't mention in Fellowship of the Ring in the movie, when they see the troll statues, there's no mention of how they became petrified,
yeah.
right? In terms of
so,
the sun.
So it's maybe it's possible that they actually natural sunlight doesn't necessarily turn them to stones, but Gandalf can use sunlight in a trollbane spell that turns them to stone or something.
It could be. That
maybe sunlight is a necessary ingredient in stonifying trolls, but not sufficient. You also need magic. So that's a very good point.
That's a good point.
I hadn't thought about that.
Now, Scott Underhill, he thinks A is plausible, that he'll accomplish it as he does in the book, but with a few changes. There's no talking purse, and there was quite a bit of back and forth about, you know, people wanting there to be a talking purse. But no talking purse. Perhaps Bilbo grabs the key from the troll's pocket instead. The dwarves rush the trolls all at once, but get thrown into sacks anyway. I'm hoping the trolls win very easily to emphasize the general theme that the dwarves really aren't much more competent than Bilbo when it comes to adventuring. Three, when Gandalf returns, he lets Bilbo see him immediately and gives him a wink before doing the ventriloquism. And four, Gandalf says, "Don, take you all," in his own voice, not one of the troll's voices as he does in the book. Again, there's an assumption here too that this "Don, take you all" line is going to be in the movie, and it may not be based on what you just pointed out.
Yeah, that's true. I think I'll shot that regardless. I guess the only circumstance, the only answer we have, well, actually, answers B and D both preclude that. If the dwarves escape and the trolls are just left to their own devices and turned to stone, or if they fight them off with swords, I don't see why anyone would shout it. But in both A and C, I don't think the "Don, take you all" line is precluded. And since it's not, I'm sure they would include it if he was casting a spell. I bet "Don, take you all" is a great spell line.
Well, plus "Don, take you all" could become just as popular as "You shall not pass," right? I mean, it could become a keynote line.
Yeah, that's
line.
True. That could be the new line. I don't think it'll work quite as well as a car bumper sticker.
No, it could be a good t-shirt.
Yes.
Now, let's see. Scott also goes on to say, one problem is the length of the trolls' debate. In the book, it takes a couple of hours, he thinks, for them to decide how to cook the dwarves. Obviously, that would stretch on too long. But I have no problem with the trolls engaging in some sadistic banter. The orcs in Lord of the Rings do the same. And Scott mentions the line, "Looks like meat's back on the menu, boys," you know, was in the – it was running through his head through the entire podcast.
Yes.
And I also assume Gandalf's voice throwing was magically enhanced in the book. It makes more sense than Gandalf just happening to have a gift for ventriloquism. So I would count magic ventriloquism as A and not C. C would be if Gandalf stands up and blasts them sunlight a la Helm's Deep, or just directly turns them to stone, which I was surprised you didn't mention as a possibility. The movie doesn't establish that it was sunlight which did it, the trolls, which you just mentioned. And that's true. That is true. And highlighted that because we, you know, you didn't talk about that actually.
Yeah. I think we mean for answer C to be interpreted that
to be
way.
That's
why we said magic. Gandalf uses magic to defeat them either directly or indirectly. If he uses spells to confound them or delay
that's
them,
C.
such that they get caught by Sun, that counts as C. If he blasts them with a Troll's Bane spell that turns them to stone directly, that is also C. If he focuses the sunlight somehow magically, that's also C. I think magically enhanced ventriloquism counts as A. I think that's fine, as long as the magic is subtle. If he's muttering in the book, I think in the book it's ambiguous, and I think Corey would dispute that it's magically enhanced. Corey would say, no, it's just he's just being clever.
Gandalf happens to have a talent for ventriloquism. Yeah. Well, actually, it's not even ventriloquism, is it? I mean, Gandalf's actually hiding in a bush.
Yeah, he's throwing his voice.
He's throwing his voice, actually. Yeah.
So, so I guess you could argue that that's Tolkien magic. Tolkien magic is subtle, so it maybe you could argue that it's Tolkien magic enhanced. I think what we're saying with C is not Tolkien magic, Peter Jackson.
It's Jackson
magic,
added
that he'll swing his staff, chant a spell, create some pyrotechnics, and it will be clear and undisputable that he is wielding magic to defeat the trolls.
Yeah. He's got the ring, you know, he may do something with the ring.
If he's doing something just, you know, if he's throwing his voice and if the viewer looks and says, well, he must be using magic, but there's no strong, obvious on-screen evidence of magic other than what's happening, you know, what he's achieving, then I would say that still counts as A.
Right.
That's how we distinguish between A and C.
All right. Okay. Let's see. I have a long one here from Michael Lucero.
Do you want to give us it looks like he has 3 points. Can you summarize
them?
He does.
Let's see. Let's see. You mentioned the filmmakers possibly wanted to establish a scene. He says that instead of having people go in and try to steal something from the trolls, they'll have the dwarves sneak up on them, observe them, and debate what to do. Most of the dwarves want to just leave them alone, but somebody, probably Dwalin, as he looks the most hardcore and scar-strewn of all the dwarves, says something like, it's not honorable to flee from a foe. Mm-hmm. So he thinks there's going to be some strategic conversation prior to them rushing in to try to take them over. And then the second point, he says that you mentioned that since the Trollstone are depicted in Fellowship of the Ring, he says he doesn't necessarily think that this means they have to be sitting around the fire like in the book when their petrification happens. It could be a gradual one, or it might take a few seconds for it to happen. So his point is that they could be changing – they could have changed their position, you know, from the time that the stone turning starts to the time it completes.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point.
Yeah, you know, where we see sort of this gradual from the ground up stonification or something. And then third is one difficulty that I don't think was addressed in the podcast is the issue of time. It's easy for the reader to imagine that a whole night has passed, but how do you show that in the movie? I have a note on this myself, which is that we could return to the frame here where Bilbo's voice is saying it went on like this all night. You know, so we see a scene and then he says, well, basically they argued all night and there's a, you know, thing of time kind of passing. Mm-hmm. To quickly account for time passing. So I don't really see the time passing as an issue. I think that can be dealt with a voiceover or something like that.
Hmm.
You got any notes about those 3 points? Those are 3 points that Michael made.
Well, actually, what I'm doing right now is trying to find an image on the internet of the trolls turned to stone.
Turned to stone.
Because I think his gradual transformation note is an interesting and reasonable one. Like they don't have to be instantly turned to stone and therefore turned to stone in the exact position that they were standing in. So what I'm trying to determine is, what exactly do they look like in the film? And I found a really low res crappy one, which is almost impossible to determine.
I have to pull out my copy of Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, and go find that part of the movie.
Yes. So let's see. Let's see if I can open this and blow it up somehow.
Well,
It looks like they're kind of, I mean, they're just kind of, so I would assume his argument is maybe the transformation to stone is a gradual process. So maybe
where they're able to move while it's happening.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh my God, I'm turning to stone.
Yeah.
That would suggest to me that what you would see is some kind of dynamism in their stone forms, like them like in agony or trying to resist or trying to chase down a dwarf or something.
Right.
Yeah, the photo that I'm looking at, which is admittedly very grainy, it's a picture of Aragorn standing with a torch in front of the forms of the trolls. That's not how they look. To me, they look like trolls just hanging out around a campfire.
So like they just unexpectedly were troll and then stone.
Yeah. So I'm not persuaded by the possibility that they dynamically turn to stone or gradually turn to stone. So, the time issue, I think, is an issue. I think that's a good one. That like a whole night has to transpire, and they certainly won't show that on screen. And that's one of those ridiculous elements of the Hobbit book, which I think is difficult to translate to screen. Like, is it really plausible that these guys would stand around and argue about how to cook dwarves for like 5 or 6 hours until the sun came out? I mean, it's kind of goofy. So that's one case where that's one sort of element I think working against a something like A, you know, where it's like, well, Gandalf will literally trick them for almost 6 or 7 hours until the sun rises.
Right, right. Now, I could see the other thing that I thought of with regard to the time passing, besides there being sort of this voiceover of Bilbo saying, and this went on for hours, and then, you know, as the sun started, you know, as the light was starting to, the sky was starting to get light or whatever. The other thing could be, and I can't remember what goes before this, but I mean, they could actually find the trolls much later than they do in the book.
Yeah.
Much closer to dawn.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. We actually don't get any sense. Well, yeah, in the book he does say, I guess he does say it goes on for hours, but hours could be an exaggeration of like half an hour. Maybe it's like right before dawn.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I could see Jackson fiddling with
that. That actually, that seems like that could be an entirely plausible way to do this. The trolls are actually packing up and getting ready to head in to the shelter of the cave when they discover the dwarves, and that's what distracts them from the fact that it's almost dawn.
Yeah, that's a good point. So. That's a good point. So,
time is an issue. I hadn't really thought about that. That's a good point.
Well, I have one more comment here from Brent Sprinkle.
All right, I love that guy.
He says, I want to point out the fact that in the trailer when we get the dwarves rushing the troll scene, we hear the trolls roaring. In my opinion, this would indicate a tone less lighthearted and not comical, at least for that part. Will it be comical in other parts, such as the cooking debate and transition to a more serious tone? Sure, but we do know for a fact that it will not all be comical. He said, I also thought it interesting to entertain the idea that while Gandalf's cleverness in the book is the troll's undoing, what if for the film they actually give this cleverness moment to Thorin as a way to establish his leadership and develop his character? I am a purist and hope this isn't the case, but it is a possibility depending on how the fight sequence goes. I am comforted by the scene in the trailer where the sun is rising behind Gandalf, which seems to indicate it is indeed Gandalf saving the day. It was an interesting thought to entertain, though. Yeah. Which is it. An interesting thought to entertain.
All right. If for some reason, however unlikely, what we get is somehow Thorin tricking the trolls into standing around into the sunlight, like through rhetoric or persuasion or something like that, that counts as A. We're going to generalize A to mean cleverness on the part of any protagonist.
On anybody's part. Okay.
Yes, so that way.
And, you know, it is plausible. I mean, I hate to say this, you know, and I think at this stage of the Riddle in the Dark podcast, I wasn't yet, you know, willing to admit that a change this large could happen. But then subsequently with the Nazgul thing happening, now I have to revisit that thought. I mean, I could see this, you know, being Thorin, you know.
I'm not convinced. I agree that the evidence from the trailer seems to be that Gandalf is intervening somehow. That Gandalf's involved. I think one thing that they probably won't change too much from the book. Well, we'll see. But I suspect one thing they won't change is while they appear to be making the dwarves more giving each individual character more character and more differentiating them through appearance and maybe even backstory and character, they seem to be heroifying Thorin a bit and they've got the heartthrob Keeley and all that. I still think at the end of the day that the essential sort of the essential device that the dwarves generally kind of bumble from one near catastrophe to the next and frequently get saved either by sheer luck or through the intervention of Gandalf or someone like Bjorn early on and later mostly by Bilbo. I don't think they're going to change that much. I still think the dwarves are largely going to come off as you know, almost not incompetent, but basically not equal to the challenges they often face. I don't expect that what we'll see here is the dwarves formulating a plan and then fighting off the trolls, or Thorin sitting down and outwitting the trolls and arguing them, any more than I expect what we'll see is that the dwarves will actually drive off the spiders and then be captured by the elves. I think we'll still see Bilbo saving them. So that's my feeling about that.
What's your feeling about that? Yeah.
So
I think you already said this. I can't remember if you did or not. There's a fair amount of variation with the analyst answers, aren't there?
Yes.
Did you have Father Roderick?
Let me
Father
give you
Roderick
the
talk?
Rundown, and we don't have any other contributions to read or play.
Oh, okay.
So basically, for A, we have five people electing for A, which is that basically it will be in the book. It will be the way it is in the book, and that is Mark Fisher, Arwen, Father Roderick, Hannah Harlow of Houghton Mifflin, and Lillian Aloriel of the Warriors of the Westfold podcast. So Mark Fisher of Encyclopedia Arda, Arwen, Father Roderick, Hannah, and Lillian Aloriel.
Okay.
For B, we have two. That's The Last Alliance and also Golden Star of Casual Stroll to Mordor. And then for C, we have two. And that is Merrick and myself. Mm-hmm. And then D is Corey.
That lonely little D.
Yeah. Yeah, Corey,
and I remember, I'm trying to remember. I mean, he thinks they're going to fall prey to their own stupidity after the dwarves escape pursuit. The trolls simply forget about the sunrise and get caught outdoors.
Something in that vein. Basically, I think both of us feel that Gandalf's voice throwing act is just not going to work on screen. I think I'm actually. I sort of agree. It's really funny because as we were reading through the listener comments, I found myself generally agreeing that that A will be the answer. And then I looked and I said, "Wow, I picked C apparently." oops. I think I kind of agree with whoever it was. Who was it that proposed the magic enhanced ventriloquism? Is that William?
Oh, that was Scott. I thought that was Scott. Wasn't that Scott Holbrook Faust?
Yeah. Oh, Scott Holbrook Faust. Yes. Good old Scott. I think I generally agree with him that we're going to see a magicified version. Yeah. I guess I feel, or at the time apparently felt that it would be, as I pointed out, that the on-screen evidence of Gandalf wielding magic in a overt Peter Jackson way would be incontrovertible, that it would be clear that he's wielding magic through pyrotechnics or lighting or chanting or whatever, that it wouldn't just be subtle. I think Corey felt that D is the most plausible way to do it on screen and still be true to the spirit of the book. That if they did it to where somehow the dwarves managed to escape through a combination of cleverness, magic, and physical combat, they escape, the trolls do not pursue them, but instead say, "Ah, well, dang it." And while they're sitting around bemoaning the loss of dinner, they're like, "Hey, what time is it? Oh, crap," and turn to stone. And that would in fact be true to the spirit of the book, because it really, the trolls, even though Gandalf intervenes, I mean, they're idiots. It shouldn't work. Throwing your voice and confusing them, they should recognize at some point, nobody's saying any of this stuff. Who's saying this? And, you know, but they keep assuming it's one of them. So in some sense, D is actually very true to the way things happen in the book, even with some changes. And so Corey likes that as a plausible way to do it on screen and be true to the book.
Got it. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Makes sense.
So, all right. The time has come.
Me, right? Is it time for me now?
Yes.
Well, I picked B.
Okay.
That it will happen via the epic Lord of the Rings style action sequence occupying the trolls. But I'm picking B because, first of all, I'm swayed by the fact that we've seen a fight scene, you know, in the trailer. And I'm not sure, again, you know, this is going to be my steady thread through the whole thing. I'm not sure we have enough screen time for them to be overpowered and tied up and then have Gandalf save them. And that was really the basis for my choice. You know, that what's going to get us there the fastest. Plus, we've already seen the scene where they're fighting. And then, of course, the Last Alliance just, you know, they chose C, and, you know, you read their, you know, their reasoning. And I mean, I can buy into that now. But again, this is just a really hard one. I'm still sticking with B, even though, you know, Gandalf, you know, obviously has some, you know, impact. Right. So I don't know. I mean,
well, I think the sort of the thinking that you're expressing, like the way I would sort of formulate that is that essentially the most time efficient way to do this on screen is to not have a sort of the dwarves show up, they struggle with the trolls, they get captured, right. The trolls sit around and debate, then Gandalf or somebody else intervenes, and then they struggle a little more, and then they escape, but rather just go straight into the dwarves show up immediately. Maybe you have some back and forth, but you immediately go into some kind of struggle or combat, right. Or confrontation, right. And then it's resolved within a couple minutes.
Right. Right.
I think that's a very sort of practical and reasonable way to think about it that I hadn't really considered.
And I like what the Last Alliance, the point they brought up, which is for non-purists, you know, yes. For just moviegoers, this is the first action sequence. And, you know, you got – and just kind of, I think, by the equation or the formula for movies, you got to, you know, get some energy going pretty early on in a movie, and this would be the place to do it.
Yeah. Yep, I think that's very reasonable. I think that's and this is often sort of the dilemma with thinking this through is kind of the way you frame your thinking about it. Like, and oftentimes Corey and I come at it from a sort of what is the best way to adapt the story as it is,
right.
Into a film, but sometimes I think, you know, I imagine I'd like to think that's how the screenwriters come at it, but. I imagine that at least some of the times they just come and say, okay, let's have a scene with dwarves and trolls because there's a scene of that in the book. How does it make sense to do this? And in this case, every troll we've ever seen on screen in Lord of the Rings was like basically a living battering ram and a howling,
right.
Howling
right.
Monster. We've never seen any of them speak. And they seem like almost sub-intelligent, below the intelligence of the orcs.
Right.
So when we see them on screen, particularly if they look similar to the trolls we've seen before, if they start talking in Cockney accents and having a debate, and their first reaction is not to pull out their giant hammers and start trying to do a Hulk smash on the dwarves, people are going to kind of be surprised by that. So,
that's true. That's true. I mean, there's going to have to be that element, even if they have more smarts than the troll we met in Moria in Fellowship of the Ring. I mean, I know that in the book, you know, Tolkien made that distinction between the trolls that we saw. Remember, he says that early on, and I think Gandalf says it to Bilbo in the Long Expected Party in Fellowship of the Ring. You know, trolls are abroad, and they're much more cunning, or I forget. No, that was another way around. Anyway, the thing is, there was some distinction made to where the troll that they met in Moria was some different species of troll. You know, that he made it a point of doing that. You can't really – I don't know that you can do that a whole lot in the movies. I mean, I think you're right. They're going to need to be sort of, you know, hammer first and ask questions later type beings.
Yep.
Now, I will make a caveat here. I'm going to go ahead and stick with B just because my ethics tell me I should do that. But I will say that I could see sort of this action sequence at the beginning, you know, and then – but the dwarves fail. In other words, they go in, you know, swords ablazing, but they fail and do end up getting bagged, and then Gandalf has to save them with magic. So, you know, I think that kind of sequence, if I was going to follow that, I would have to then say C. But I'm going to stick with B just because I said B and I don't want to back off from it.
Ah. thank you. That's very. I actually, you know what though? Honestly, I think you're allowed to change it if you. Because here's what I would say to you. Here's what I say to you. It really comes down to because we often have that dilemma too. Because it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine sort of like magic and physical combat separate in this scene. If it comes to combat, I'm sure it'll include both. So really, it really boils down to. What was the functional element? What really led to the troll's defeat? If it is the dwarves and Gandalf fighting off the if it is the dwarves and Gandalf kind of working together to fight off the trolls, and just kind of either mid combat the sun rises and the trolls get turned to stone, or they fight and they're just now escaping and the trolls decide to chase after them and they get turned to stone. That's B. That's combat. The okay. magic answer would be more. It's more on the line of like Gandalf either somehow. Magically in, I think the way to think about C is that basically Gandalf saves them through magic. Whereas well, B is you know, more working as a right. fellowship, they fight off the trolls.
And you know what? I mean, as we talk through this, I don't see them doing this. What I think is going to happen, I think the scene we saw in the trailer, I think the dwarves rush in without thinking. Uh-huh. I think they're more like, you know, Klingon again, you know, it's like, let's go get them, you know, that kind of thing. They rush in and I don't think they're successful. I mean, I think the trolls end up besting them, yes. I think is what'll happen. And I do think Gandalf is going to have to come to their rescue, similar to how he does in the book, because he's not with them at the time in the book either when they do this. But I think the difference is going to be that he will do it with magic and not just by the book, because mm-hmm. I think Jackson is going to feel that he needs to do it with magic. So you're gracious enough to allow me to do it. I will take the opportunity and change to C.
Okay. I think that's perfectly fine. I think that's perfectly, perfectly fine. Because Corey and I often changed our answers in the course of discussing them. We often
That's
said, you
right.
know, I was going to pick it, but I don't
right.
have a problem with
okay.
that.
Okay. All right. Now, I do think, because I think the bottom line here is I think that Gandalf does end up being the one to save them. Mm-hmm. And so I think it would then have to be either A or C is okay. what you're up to. So
cool.
And I think it has to be C.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Oh, so, so we have you down for C. Very good. So one other thing I wanted to do with this topic before we, first of all, any parting thoughts you'd like to add, but also, one thing that came up, as you noted in the notes, one thing that came up repeatedly was the talking purse. People seemed taken aback that we wouldn't mention that we wouldn't discuss yes. it. And I don't blame them. Because I can't believe Corey managed to let us do this episode without talking about the talking purse. So, so what I'm going to do, since I'm just more and more loving this idea of subordinate questions or additional extra questions, I'm going to add a question B for this, which we will have to run by all of our analysts again, or we'll figure out what to do with these. But I want to get us, you and me, on record for this okay. right now. Talking purse, yes or no?
You go first.
No talking purse.
I agree. I don't think a talking purse. And the reason I don't think a talking purse is I think it goes back to what you were just saying earlier about Tolkien's humor versus modern day humor. Mm-hmm. I think a talking purse fits into the sort of Hans Christian Andersen, Grimm, lying fairy tale sort of tradition, you know, that Tolkien writes in. But I just don't think it has a place in the kind of scene that I could see in this movie.
Yep.
And plus, we already know that there's going to be some violence and, you know, more serious types of scenes. I don't see the talking purse being part of
yep.
the scene.
So we would love to revive this. I promise I will get Corey on record for this as soon as we can. And we would love to revive the discussion about the trolls and the humor and especially the talking purse. Love to hear what our listeners think. Will the talking purse actually make an appearance in the film? And let me make sure this is clear. I would not be surprised if there is some kind of nod, like a quick glimpse of a purse, even a purse designed to look like as though it might talk, or that has a you know a design that looks like a mouth,
kind of like an Easter egg.
Yes,
for those
an
of
Easter
us
egg-ish type, like physical, visual appearance of it, or a reference to a talking purse. What we want to know is, will there be a purse on screen that speaks and
actually
makes
speaking?
A comment as like Bilbo tries to steal or something? If it does not speak, it doesn't count as the talking purse. We might say, aha, that was the talking purse. But if it doesn't talk, then the answer
yes.
to this question is no.
The answer is no.
So I'm
it's not obvious. If yes. it's not super obvious to anybody watching the movie.
Right. I'm saying that when I say no, and presumably when you say no, what we mean is no purses will speak on screen.
No purses will speak yes. on screen.
There may be a purse may appear on screen, which we would say that must be the talking purse. But if it does not speak, then it did not. It's not a talking
Benedict
purse.
Benedict Cumberbatch will not be voicing
yes.
you know, an uncredited voicing of the talking purse.
That's right. Although if you were going to if you were going to do a if you were going to do a talking purse in this film, then what you would the person you would want to voice it, of course, would be Benedict Cumberbatch.
Of course. You know, I like this actually. You know, these corollary questions, because we can do yes no questions. You know,
yes.
You and Corey have a tough job of figuring out these multiple choice answers, but yes. You know, you and I can do this yes no thing. I like that.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's a great. I like the addition of those questions. Yeah, because they can be a lot simpler. And we're actually you're right. Corey and I've had a number of questions that we formulated where we ultimately gave up and said, no, we can't come up with more than two answers, and we're not sure yet. We sort of we're leaning currently toward keeping things, you know, multiple choice with at least three answers, preferably four, sometimes five.
I think that's right. I think so, that should be our rule, that anything that's digital is just what you and I do it in a digest.
Yes. Yep.
You and Corey have to stick with the multiple choice, yep. You know, A, yep. B, C, D. Yeah.
I think that's a great idea. I think this is a perfect solution to incorporating more questions in. So
perfect.
Cool. All right. Well,
another digest.
Another one down. And next up will be the sort of the big one, as it was before, which is the split and the necromancer content. I'm really excited to hear what you have to say about the split, get you on record with that, and also to hear what you think about the potential of an Avengers-style confrontation between the White Council and Sauron's forces at the Dol Guldur. So,
yeah, that's great.
Thank you again, Trish. It's been fun. These episodes, I think, are great and going really well. I also
slice of heaven for me, I can tell you that.
Good. I'm glad. I also want to thank all of our analysts who participate. Of course, Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, myself and Trish, Mark Fisher of the Encyclopedia of Arda, Google it, American Golden Star of A Casual Stroll to Mordor, casualstrolltomordor.com, and on Twitter, at Stroll to Mordor, Father Roderick Von Hogan, my partner on the SQPN Secrets of the Hobbit podcast, Google it, and our Twitter is at Hobbit Podcast. Arwen of Middle Earth News, at Middle Earth News is their Twitter account, and news.mymiddleearth.com is their website. Lily and L'Oreal, also from Middle Earth News, and also members of the Warriors of the Westfold podcast, which you can find at radio.mymiddleearth.com, and on Twitter, at Westfold Warriors. The Last Alliance, the University of Alberta Tolkien Society, their website is lastallianceuofa.com. So thank you very much, especially to you, our listeners. Thank you for all of your feedback on the Riddles in the Dark episodes and for listening to these new Riddles in the Dark Digest episodes we're producing. Keep the conversation going. We're loving it. We're going to have a lot more questions and a lot more topics for you guys to discuss. And Trish, if you would, take us away.
Thanks for listening, and Godspeed.
We want to give a special thank you to John DiBartolo and the Lonely Mountain Band for allowing us to include their music in our podcasts. You can learn more about these songs, download samples, and buy their albums at minstrelsongs.com. If you are interested in getting involved in Riddles in the Dark or other Mythgard and Tolkien Professor productions, send an email to kale, K-A-L-E, at mythgard.org.